8th, on Monday, August 12th, this meeting of the Budget Committee is called to order. The minutes of the June 2019 budget meeting. Do we need to vote, or we just say that they're
accepting them and they're posted on their website?
Okay. Good. Now on to the main course of meeting, which is the budget discussion. And so, first up,
if we could, for the record,
that's a good idea.
Keith Blanchard, board staff.
Kevin Mountain, board staff.
Alexis Pagel, JLBC.
Dr. Jennifer Leif, board member.
Fred Lockhart, member of the board. Mike Romano, board member.
Terry Stanville, executive director.
Paul Mittman, board member. Okay, moving on. Reviewed licensure fees, state by state comparison.
There is Britannica is the password, and it's yes. Great.
Thank you.
Yep.
All right, so I think everyone had a chance to review this. I sent Terry, I didn't send it to everybody.
That's right.
So I replied only to Terry, which was thank God for Wyoming.
It's like Wyoming
has lower fees than we do. But are there any other takeaways on this?
Kevin and Keith, which one prepared this?
I did.
Okay. Very, very nice job, by the way. Very detailed. Mm-hmm. Extremely detailed.
Do you have any?
I don't know.
Any, from kind of your summation, it's, some are just flat fees,
right.
Some are obviously based on enrollments, on revenue, and that. Any major takeaways?
The biggest takeaways that I saw is we're still certainly down in the lower in terms of the fees, within the bottom 20%. There's the fees are, as you can see, kind of all over the place in terms of how it's based on GTR, if it's based on student enrollment. There's a lot of states that have lower fees, but then they, for every admissions representative, there is a fee that's associated with that particular individual. So they may have it may show a lower fee, but then if you've got 10 reps at $500 a person, and then boom, that goes right back up to that. And then any time they change a rep is another anywhere between $100 and $500 depending upon the state. So that's something that obviously we don't have any component of ours to. And then some of them were based on low GPR, GTR. The one thing that was pretty evident is the cost of entry to come into and get your license. For us, it's $800. For the majority of the other states, it's anywhere between $2,500 and $25,000. It just depends on the state. We did kind of a casual discussion here last week about what that $800 looks like in terms of time spent for the licensing fee. So we bring in $800 for a brand new license, a brand new institution. We figure we put in, what did we say, probably 40 hours on that application. And then you just do simple math and figure $40 an hour. We're triple, quadruple the amount of dollars in man hours to do this. That does not include your time. That doesn't include board time. That's just to get it to you.
Are you recommending the board members start to get paid?
I don't remember that being on one of the
$50.
$50. That's great.
I'm playing it back. I'm trying to find a little form.
So that is you look at the amount of time that's invested in going through an application, and some of the. I wish we could find a way to say, okay, well, the larger schools that come in, it takes more time than the smaller schools. It's pretty much equal right across the board. I mean, the larger schools that come in, they have multiple states that they're in. Every state is different. So then they have to make a lot of changes in order for it to comply with our rules. The small schools, as we've had, you know, we just had one that fell off this today or yesterday, which we're thankful for. That was how many hours do you think?
Oh,
I mean, 100 hours for that one particular application to get it to a point, and with Fred helping as well, to a point where we couldn't put it in front of you. It wouldn't have been an appropriate thing for you to review.
You would not have been happy.
I think at least with the established schools, so you'd find that they at least have the experience to know what you're talking about. I mean, it's a
big
one from most
schools. So you really won't be... Even the new ones where I have been told, and I won't name any, that they know what they're doing, I still ended up spending an inordinate amount of time, even when they say, oh yeah, they know what they're doing.
With what you see from kind of where we land, that $800 fee, recognizing, trying to be a business-friendly state, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we don't want to put so many barriers in that it shuts people down from even trying. Would you have a recommendation from the standpoint of, you know, recognizing some as upwards of $20,000 and others are not quite as low as us, or $800?
I think some of the recommendations that we could come up with, one, in terms of the financial piece to it. So there's the time, and then there's the money that we get that we're bringing in. And we are trying to be as friendly to the business community as we can. Those initial conversations with the schools and the initial review of the application of the enrollment agreements of the catalogs is so extensive. That has changed over the years. That has become much more... I don't want to call it a burden on the institution, but it's much more complex today than it was perhaps 3 or 4 years ago, with no change in rule, no change in statute. Those are still exactly the way they were 10 years, 15 years ago.
It's basically the way the board has evolved and changed at the way that it reviews applications as opposed to the past.
Okay.
Would you like me to elaborate? No? No, okay.
I think I'm more, well, personally, if we're just kind of having a discussion here, just trying to get a sense of, you know, would we suggest a higher increase in that application fee of some type of amount, maybe $1,200 or $1,000, mm-hmm. to at least up the barrier a mm-hmm. little bit, but at the same time, it seems as though one of the weak points in the process is somebody throws crap at the wall, and then you spend a lot of time cleaning the crap up,
mm-hmm.
and there's no penalty
Correct.
Associated with that. So it almost feels like when I think of another accrediting institution, they will charge you a fee to our submittal. If you have to then resubmit, there is a fee associated with that, right? So are those possible considerations?
I think that would be, so the 800 barrier to get in is really a kind of an insignificant little bump for pretty much anybody, even if you want to start your own small school. But it is that, exactly what you're talking about, and there's a number of other states that charge every time, so you get one, for $800, you get one review and one pass at this. And where the expectation is that there's a level of what you're going to submit to show that you can run a school efficiently. And if that's the case, then, you know, that might be relatively, you know, short period of time. It's the, like, this one particular case, and it happens all the time, where it's just back and forth and back and forth. And, you know, Keith and Terry are down to making, you know, $4 an hour of review time because they put so many hours into it when you look at that $800. And I think that that would be a very wise direction to go if we could potentially do it, is to say, okay, for every second review, that's going to be an additional $300, $500. And then that will, by the time you get it to the second, you don't want to pay a third fee or a fourth or a fifth, and in some cases it could be, gosh, how many was it worth?
Oh, God. 10?
Yeah, it could have been 10 reviews. To get it to the point where we told her it was probably the best that she withdrew the application and started working.
Yeah, and so, you know, too, we give them sample documents. It's not like they have to come up with what's an enrollment agreement, what's a catalog. There's samples of catalog, there's samples of the enrollment agreement, there's checklists that kind of help you follow.
I'm just going to make I'll call it out so people on the phone hear. So one is that the initial fee has one review and then has to resubmit. So that's option one. Because what you're talking about, it's not really just a submission. You submit, and then you're getting consulting services from the department.
Well, and the board members.
So another way would be, your submission is, if it's denied, and you have to fork over another $800, mm-hmm. in which case people can pay consultants to do consulting work. Because otherwise, you know, you're tasking, you know, a staff that can do it, but it takes you away from the other regulatory. So I would say, or consulting. So that would be, so that, does that capture, like, this first idea?
If I could, and I don't, my apologies, Tim. We do have licensing time frames. It's in rule, it's rule 102. The first submission is where it's determined to be complete. That means, you know, they just gave us the enrollment agreement, they gave us the bond or whatever. Then, I mean, that's very basic. And then the second set is, then you begin the substantive review by staff. Now, we did revise rules in 2016 that, now I'd have to go back and look, if it's one or two submissions, then after that, could you go in one or two and go into the substantive, those little philosophies I've looked at. Technically, the application should be closed.
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 Closed is that? Is there a final?
Closed
is not.
Closed.
Never even gets to the board.
Doesn't even get to you. I'll be very honest with you. The few times that has been raised, the people get very upset and will rattle bushes that we don't need rattled. So, and because we've evolved into being the way that we are and looking at things, I've just kind of rolled with it. I've not closed them.
So is there any way...
Can you get in trouble doing the opposite, where you're not following your policy?
Let's do
but
this.
See, that's just their benefit that I'm not.
Okay. Let's do this for now. So this is one potential area. I mean, it could be that... But they know before it gets to the initial review that it needs to be completed, and, you know, so who knows what. So this is one. Whether either, you know, Kevin or, you know, from your, you know, summary of this, any other, there's one thing that jumped out to me was that a lot of the states have in-state and out-of-state. And we have a significant number of out-of-state.
If we're determining out-of-state, is schools coming from out-of-state that want to have physical presence here, or administrative centers? Because
there's two separate
ways.
Either one. There's no out-of-state. I don't know, it's kind of like, It's kind of like the state universities here have, and the state universities in every state now are hampered by what they're allowed to charge in state, and so they make it up without a state.
Maybe that's hard, though, because the physical presence is what makes you an in-state entity. Otherwise, you're...
Or they don't need licensure if they don't, or unless they're administrative.
Again, I'd also have sensitivity to any barriers to help grow the state, right? So anything that tends to turn people off from wanting to start a school or potentially bring a school physical presence or headquarters or whatever that is here based on higher barriers, essentially, I would have said just sensitivity, not saying we can't get there, but it does seem, when we were talking before,
we're going to have like sensitivity to the fact that the governor doesn't want to raise the rates, the legislature doesn't raise the rates, and so so one way or the other, there's going to be, we're going to have to come up with some kind of formula, whether it's this, you know, or I would say number two, and I don't know if in-state or out-of-state, but like, you know, when a school, take your pick, every month, we have schools that are coming in either for renewal or for in-state that are incorporated elsewhere. Yeah, some of them have boatloads of money. You know, this isn't even their primary. This isn't even their primary business.
See, and this is where I'm at. I mean, to me, the usage. I don't know why we just don't go after the fees. To be honest, I think anyone who uses this would say the fees are really low. That's who's using the time of the board. That's who should be paying. Even if you're talking about upping your application fee from $500 for a program to $750. Really, then you'll make the budget. And it's on the person who's using it. It's not on everybody else. I don't...
Here's what I would throw out, is on the initial, it could be $1,500 and then $500 per program.
Yeah, or $750 per program. Figure out what we have to do for initial. Even the renewal fees are really low. Like, no one is going to have a cow. From an institution, right. if the highest one is what, $2,300?
And we were talking about this between the three of us last week. Okay, Kevin ran a report for me, and our fees have been, it's been since '96, right? And the highest is $2,300, and it's $7 million plus. Okay, back in 1996, if you were making $7 million, you were probably doing really well. Yeah. Okay, I just took. Our highest tier, and 26 of them are over $10 million. Then I did it again for over $15 million. You have 18. You could take those, that top tier, leave the smaller guys alone, and break it out into additional tiers and get more money.
And even if you double. I can't even imagine that if you even doubled the top tier from 2,300 to 5, no one is going to appear. I mean, we're running in circles for no reason.
The schools may not, okay? And I don't disagree with you. The schools may not. That's not our problem, Jen.
I know, but you get the schools to write statements that say they don't care, that this is in support of this board, and off we go. You're the biggest ones to do it.
Governor Ducey doesn't believe in the 90-10 agency. He believes that everybody's a taxpayer. So fee increases is a tax increase. And that we heard a few years ago when we met. That's where there's that disconnect.
That's our problem.
I know, but anything else is going to put the, you know, if you go by a student, you go by anything else, you're putting the onus on someone else besides the head of the
I don't disagree with you at all. Not in the least. That's where it should, in my opinion, be.
And just based on the research and talking to various states, most of the states are in the same, you know, kind of issue that we have, which is their leadership, their governors are not overly enthusiastic about putting additional barriers to doing business in their state. That's pretty much the same across the board, with exception, a few exceptions. California is obviously one. I think something that is a little different with us, and my opinion is we ought to, we probably, we're either going to not move anything forward and not try, or we try, assuming it may not actually give us what we want or make a change. And I understand that it might ruffle some feathers over in the executive suite, but if we don't do it, that's what we haven't done it in a long time. If we don't at least start that process of saying, we're not talking about changing every fee for every school, we want to have additional categories for those institutions that make more than $10 million. And the little guy that comes in at $600 renewal that has their dog grooming school, $600 shouldn't be a limitation or a barrier to them doing business either. $5,000 to UTI or to Grand Canyon, moving it from $2,300 to $5,000, does not significantly impact your organizations.
I'd rather be in program fees than ever have anything to do with them student by student, because that's not really the
right.
But I'm saying, like, when I'm looking at how to make this make sense, and again, if the schools are going insane, and you're trying to get to a net zero, right? I mean, you're not trying to build up a huge nest egg or anything. It's not like you're overcharging or you're trying to get exuberant. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you're coming down to something that's logical, a normal person is going to be able to sit there and say, they don't have enough money to operate as it is, so you've got to do something. And if the people that are using the services are okay with it...
Well, and in part it would be, and you were mentioning that, so like the support of business leaders, which is something that our governor is very interested in. Your leader has a very, very strong relationship and association with the governor. So if something were to come from him in that direction, from Paul, from you, from your leadership, Kim, you know, if there were conversations held at that level that, hey, I'm a business owner, and I get the challenges, and I get we're trying to attract, but partly to attract more institutions is to have a board like this that is unbelievably supportive. I mean, these people are coming in and getting tens of thousands of dollars worth of consultation from staff and from you, from the board, at really low cost of doing business. So if we had that level of support where we could get it from the bigger institutions, because really what we're talking about here, I think, would be from that $7 million, have two or three more staggered points going up to up and above $20 million, and then it's all $5,700 or whatever the number might be. I think that could be helpful, at least to start a conversation. But if we just go in there to try to find a Republican senator that wants to jump on board raising fees, I don't know if there's a lot of appetite for that.
Yeah, we attempted to do... Oh, go ahead.
The schools that went out of business, which is one of the reasons that this is happening, I understand that they went, I get that, there's a lot of stuff up there, from federal to everything else that's associated with that. The small one, my only question would be, how many of those tend to turn over, and is there an assessment about the quality of those schools that maybe even a small increase on those might keep the schools that are really serious about being schools, and not everybody who wants to thinks that they can run a school? Is that an issue at all?
I think it is,
yeah.
Yes. And that's why we, three or four years ago, that's why we did only on the new ones, because $800, that's not a lot of money. And look at some of the schools, and when you know dang good and well, they're not going to be here in a year. And we worked our tail off with them, and they still don't get it, and they're not here in a year or two, or they're here in a year, and they've still had no students. Why?
Well, here in a year and don't have any students is what's of concern to me, that here and have students and having a lot of problems because they don't know the ins and outs of running a school. And I'll say as a board member sometimes, and I'm looking at what they're writing up, and I just, you know, I get a little bit nervous because I'm like, that doesn't show me that you know what this looks like. There's not credentials that are required in some cases, you know what I mean? Like HLC has credentials, you know, to do that, and we don't have any of that stuff. So I was just wondering, could you stop some of the churn? Like, is that okay?
Yeah. Oh. There's not much skin in the game at $800. And Terry and I and Kevin spoke with a senator about just adding a $500 fee for new programs or additional programs at the initial licensure. So it's $800 plus $500 per program, which makes sense because our schools are already paying $500 for every program modification. So it's really just almost making it a level playing field. And University of Phoenix, GCU, those are the ones that submitted a lot of programs and program changes and paid those fees. A new school, recently accredited with 600 programs, 300 programs, it's
$800. $800, that makes no sense.
And if it fails, they're at $800. And I think they would think a little bit about what they submit if there was a little bit more skin in the game.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but a 10% increase in fees would cover the deficit. More than cover the deficit. Is that an accurate statement?
Yeah, I would say that that's accurate.
10?
10%.
What are we trying to get to? What's the number? 3 or 450?
Okay, here, our appropriation for this upcoming year is $423,000. Our revenue is $369. We're 54. This isn't strike, okay? This is just straight
operation.
We're $54,000 short. We probably should easily. No, we're not talking a lot of money.
No, and I'm not the finance person here, but we're not just 54 short. Like, right? So if I look at this, and last year the budget that you came up with, right, was 300 coming in.
For
fees
no.
And renewals?
No,
it's
369.
360, yeah.
369.
Okay, I don't know what I'm saying. But this is, so 369 that you expect to get, but that's variable, though, too, because it depends on the number of programs.
Oh, yeah, variable.
Yeah, so renewals, you might be able to, like, do a bit more, programs are going to change all over the place.
Everything changes, yeah.
So don't you have to bring in the total amount that you need every year?
Yes, and
you
should
have to bring the appropriation.
That's what I'm saying. The appropriation, you should always cover your appropriation. And we did historically in the past. We actually had that $600,000 to $700,000 5 years ago.
So don't we need to cover more than a $50,000?
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's our bottom line. That's the bare minimum. You should easily at least have in your fund balance at least 2 years of operating. That used to be the historical thing that they would say. So you should have $800,000 or so in our fund balance. Well, we're down under 2 or 3, I think. We're getting there. So we used to always have enough revenue to carry our expenses until last year was the first year and then this year. So that's why I'm saying in 4 years, according to the projections, we're not here because we will have eaten up our fund balance. So our appropriations, 423, we need to have more than that. We should easily be $500,000, if not more, just so you can start building that fund balance up. Plus, if you get a big enough fund balance, you can do what we did for 7 years, where I transferred money out of our fund balance into strike. Yeah. And I didn't have to bill anybody in strike for 7 years. Everything tanked in 2016.
So I guess Mike goes to, and you guys have more, wouldn't you need more than 10%? I was thinking
50.
If
that's, yeah,
To get us to being whole for the next year, 10, yeah, but to move forward, in order to build that balance to where, to where we are back to where we were before, which is $700,000 or $800,000 in fund balance, it would take more than that. And as you all know, the environment obviously has changed over the last 3 or 4 years with a number of schools. We had a whole series of schools just in this renewal cycle. Cortiva had 4 campuses that were at $2,300 each, and they're gone. We already know of a few institutions that won't be there next year. Fortis, Arizona Summit. Golf Academy was last year, so they're gone. So a lot of that $2,300 of the bigger schools, so when we talk about small schools paying smaller amount, bigger schools bigger amount, the bigger schools are the ones that are leaving. It's not necessarily the mom and pop
And that used to just level itself out. We'd have the smaller ones before the big ones started going down. We'd lose 15 to 20. We'd get 15 to 20. So we were pretty, it would level it out. It's just we've lost all these big ones. We've gone down from a high at around 265 and we're 203 now.
203.
Yeah, so the one you sent says you guys have revenue of 300,000. Sorry, I'm not lying. It said 300,000. So that's when I was thinking, if you're trying to get to be able to operate for 450,000, wouldn't you need an increase of 50% on fees?
Where are you saying 300,000?
I'm not crazy, right?
How much do schools pay for stripe funds?
It depends. It's based on your gross tuition. So, Mike's school, so MMI and UTI pay $10 per newly registered student in the prior year's renewal window. But some of the schools, the smaller ones, so it's based on their GTR. So some of the schools are paying. I've got one school I think paid like 43 cents a student. Some of them pay $6 or $7 a student. It just depends on where your revenue flows.
We're supposed to have $500,000 in there. We haven't had $500,000 in some time.
And that challenge was the Gulf Academy hit hard. Art Institute hit hard. And some of the other institutions, I mean, and if we go back, it's the Everest that hurt as well, which was a regionally accredited institution that was paid, but they didn't pay into it.
But and I know we keep jumping back and forth here, you're estimated at least what it looks or actually approved from the appropriation side for 2020 is
$423,000,
right?
Correct.
And so the question is, we won't actually be able to draw that money in from the revenue.
So we're not going to draw that money for revenue.
Right. So you're continuing to deplete out. We're trying to reverse that situation.
Right.
So is it just from the operating expense standpoint as well as the funds, or I'm trying to appreciate, like, ultimately what the true number is that we need to get to? Is that really the 672? Thousand, for example.
See, that what you're looking at right there is that's our operating plus
the fund.
The fund.
Right.
So they're two separate.
So
they're two separate accounts.
Why don't we do this just to bring us back to the agenda? So we reviewed the state by state cuts in 2 weeks. We know we're in the bottom 20%. There are some sort of variable ways that other states do it. It's out of state, there's per programs, etc. So there's some precedents that are there. Anything else on the state by state?
Any attempt to true it up so you're really trying to balance state by state with the fifth largest city in the United States of America now. We have the most populous capital city of any state. So just kind of, where are we with our gravitas, and where are they? I mean, are we really comparing things across the board, or is this great disparity because of our size? For instance, I see that there's some states charge next to nothing. Well, I mean, people they have probably got more help than people in Montana, so just trying to massage us there. I mean, really trying to look at something.
And just from what my review of it and talking to the individuals, a lot of that lower-end review is that there's no review of the programs. There's really no consumer protection. Basically, the way they go in is allow the student to sue the state if they were, go to the attorney general, go to the complaint department, and put in a lawsuit if something, if they felt that they were being mistreated. And again, a number of those states are small. They don't have the big ones. They don't have a lot of the larger universities or institutions that would need, that component, especially when you deal with Title IV and all of that. But there are states that are larger, obviously, that have more institutions. California, Texas,
Pennsylvania is an odd state.
With a
ton of schools and actually lower fees than we have. I mean, but there may be other aspects to the way the state government is run, mm-hmm. that there are other ways that this work gets taken care of. I mean, I think we get the gist of it. We're sort of towards the bottom, and you know, if there's a takeaway that we're going to, because I mean, ultimately, somehow this is going to have to get in front of the governor's office and at least, you know, one of the education committees, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody's going to have to sponsor something. So something where we could take this and maybe graphically we show it on a, you know, kind of like a graph where there's a map of the United States and we show where we are. Something so somebody can see it at a glance and see where we are. And then maybe if there are certain ideas out of here that we can pull out, let's do that. And then review supplemental fees and revenue we covered?
No.
No.
Okay.
Those were the two sheets where kind of the schools listed out.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right.
So
right.
One was kind of static at the $500 for the program things and stuff like that, and then the other was anywhere between $800 and $2,300.
Right. So that's the program. So the $800 or the $600 and $2,300 is renewal only, just that particular fee, and then the supplemental is anything that has a fee attached to it, new program fee. What are the other fees that are, so there's new programs.
The supplementals are the
change of ownership,
change of location, and programs.
That's what you gave us was last year's revenue.
Yes.
Which document was it, Terry?
I'm sorry?
Which document?
What was it called? FY 2019 service fee revenue.
Service request.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Right. Thank you. Service request. And
so
how many
service
were
you did 114,000, right?
Mm-hmm.
And for the revenue side, I thought it was like 300 or something.
Yeah,
like
for
that.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now.
So that's what I was missing. I was missing out the fees.
The other thing that we do. That doesn't have a fee is the program mods.
The what now?
Program modifications. If the program
less than 25%,
and that was kind of an internal policy, I kind of used that based upon the accrediting bodies.
When there's a pen to change levels?
Yeah. I don't know if they charge or not for program mods. Does ACC charge program mods?
For over 25%.
Yeah, they do.
But under 25, do they?
For what?
Under 25?
No.
No?
You don't have to submit.
You have to have some kind of flexibility, though, to change. I think you would have to, because it's, you know what I mean, like some of the programs.
Below 25 is just a cursory notification.
Okay. For the and we did program mods because we'd have to go in and you'd have to change the name, or you'd change the curriculum, or you'd change the fees, and we identified all that as the licensing agency. We have not been charging them. According to our AG's office, we don't have the authority to not charge.
To not charge?
To not charge.
No, no.
That whenever it's reviewed or changed, it hits the term of a supplemental and should be charged. We do 114 of the. We did 114 of those last year.
So what's the 114
times 114 times 500? I did it at one point in time. Not yet. It's 50 grand
for 25. Yeah, it's
57,000. And that's not a statutory change. That is the attorney general.
Just following their own.
Yeah. She said that policy that I started, I don't know how many years ago, isn't substantiated by statute law.
Meaning we should be charging.
That there's money laying there.
That there's money
laying
there.
And then you should go back retroactively.
Not to do that.
Right.
Yeah.
Commitment.
Yeah. that would be fine.
And that would require, I think we talked, it would require the board, perhaps at whatever upcoming meeting,
clarifying
to clarify it and basically tell us to charge the $500 fee. Is that correct? Is that the way I understood that from what Frankie said?
Why would that require a board action when it sounds like we deviated from our policy?
Well, because I, because it would be better.
Based on what Frankie told us.
Based on what Frankie told us, it would be because the policy has been that if the policy is being changed and it is. The practice is being changed and it incurs a fee, it should be adopted by the board.
So would the staff not bring forward a recommendation to say we have identified where we have not been living into the policy, we've had a practice of not charging for this, mm-hmm. the policy states we should be charging for this, does board have a preference one way or the other,
mm-hmm.
board makes a motion,
right.
Okay.
So that's pretty straightforward, and we should live into the policy as it's written.
So
practice.
We could do that next week's meeting.
Thursday.
Yeah. I'll leave early.
But
this is like, why wouldn't we do this?
Right.
But let me ask you, I have a quick question. So when we see some of these schools, I don't see something where they would go back and necessarily submit a change, like, you know, some of the very, like, boat schools. Like, you're not seeing a laid-out curriculum like you might see with a regionally accredited. So what is that modification? Where would they fall? Where would they see that ever? What would they have to change in there for you to see that?
It says it in the important notes that we notify everyone. That you change any... It's in the important notice that goes out with every single renewal. It's on the website that explains what changes when you do a change and what you have to do to just do it.
So we know 114 people last year, or 114
okay.
institutions ended up taking action on that.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, do other educational institutions realize they're supposed to do that or not?
Well, what would that look like? Because I think for us, for a defined curriculum, you'll see that. Right, you'll see a course change, a course, you know, meaning flipping out a course.
You're saying that more than half of the programs did submit it.
No, we're not saying that because of the 114. The 114 instances could be, and I'd have to break that down, which I could find. It may be from 5 or 8 schools, right? It may not be from 114 different campuses. It could be you guys maybe probably did 30 of them or 40 of them.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. So
it's
the 500.
So not saying we've maybe solved the problem, but we definitely have apparently a policy in place that we have not been charging against, nor evaluating, monitoring, that if changes were being made, that schools are following the appropriate action they should be taking with that. We know it. The bottom line is 50,000. There could be an upper side associated with that. Could double, could triple. I don't know.
Yeah.
It may go down. I have no idea.
It's all based on what the schools decide to do and determine of when they reevaluate the curriculum. And it happens again at larger schools than it does at the small mom and pop. Then they don't review their curriculum, especially non-accredited. Non-accrediteds don't. They really don't do much of that at all.
The fact that there's a policy
it doesn't change the fact.
It's saying we should be executing against that, although we have had a practice where we have not. We're living outside what the policy has guided us. So, I mean, that's a whole different discussion if ultimately we want to review that policy to make a change. But I think the board, given what you're saying here, we have identified a practice that is outside of policy, and the recommendation from council is the board needs to take action to reinstitute an existing policy or discontinue the practice. That should be step number one. Certainly, if the board wants to go back and say we need to reevaluate if that's even right to have a policy like that. But I don't think I would not continue to suspend a practice after or a policy after we've identified it was a practice that was made outside of
statute.
Really? Yeah. And that was not right. It should be corrected.
Trying to be business friendly.
And which is fantastic, but at the same time, we have policies in place for a reason, right? So living outside of those, I think, puts us at risk from that. So we know that's a revenue stream.
Correct.
To some level, to what level if people end up making decisions or not, but that's the policy, and until the policy is changed, we should be living into the policy.
And we do identify changes during renewal time. It may not get reported, and then Kim will call them on it, and at that point in time, they would then be notified.
So the grooming school has an outlined curriculum that you would be able to see changes in?
Not the curriculum. That one, no, I'm not saying the curriculum we would, because we don't evaluate curriculum.
It would only be hours, program hours, change in tuition?
Objectives, tuition,
change in
objective, that'd be a new program. Right. But curriculum changes would. But see, the dog grooming school, they may change their curriculum. They may.
Okay, so it's not curriculum. So just remind me, it's total hours of the program. Mm-hmm. Credit
hours or clock hours.
Okay.
Program names.
Yep, that one's a given.
Tuition and fees.
So the school experiences a huge increase.
Yeah, how in the world am I going
to do that? Right now it would be collectively the 20... To be substantive, isn't that 25? Is it 25?
So every year we're going to pay $500 per program to increase tuition?
I'm not saying...
I'm just asking, that's what I'm going to clarify.
Yes.
So tuition increase would require...
Or decrease.
Probably have... And I don't know, did I get enough? I did not get that in-depth discussion of tuition fees. I thought about it later to talk to Frankie to see if that would trigger it. It may not.
We
still got to go in.
Tuition, but I could see clock hours, credit hours,
yeah,
program change. I mean, that all kind
tuition of, probably not
from
because
a documentation.
That's just going in and changing it.
That's every year.
I would have to have that clarified for Frankie. That probably would be online.
A good takeaway for us from this to get that clarification. But can we get back around the fact of when schools are making program name changes, credit, clock, that type of stuff? It
should be charged.
There should be a charge associated.
Okay, and I guarantee you those are not ours. Whatever the 114 are, we think that's the above 25%, and those are given to us. So I don't know what the 114 are.
There could be any number of them.
Yeah. It would be interesting for you to, outside of the 114, to try and make some determination of, is it bigger than that, or is it smaller than that? Because ultimately, right now, you've got 50,000 on the table, and that's been 50,000 most likely reoccurring, for give or take, for a number of years that has essentially not been refilling the coffers.
And I'll be very, I don't think we, until, the thing is, until Salesforce, we probably weren't tracking the numbers. Now it's through Salesforce, so now it gets tracked. And that's probably what triggered my thought process when Kevin gave me program mods and I went, oh.
So those aren't
we just lost? No.
Okay, so we can't even see what those are.
They may be, and I'd have to remember which one I gave you. If it shows blank.
Yeah, blank's on.
If it shows blank, then that would be, so when an institution goes in to submit a program modification, they'll go into Salesforce, they'll go into they'll go into the portal, they'll click it, they'll say what it is, I want a program mod, then they will complete the information and send it to us. It, at this point, does not charge them any money to do that.
COO?
It just goes out. Yeah, COO would
change
have
of
it.
Ownership. That does.
That some of these are, like...
There were a lot of change of ownerships this year.
Yeah, but there's no fee, unless my line is bad. This one, there's three lines. They look like they're all the same.
What school?
Carrington, Mesa Campus.
No, they paid.
Yeah, they paid. So sometimes it kind of depends on on how they pay it, but they'll pay it all in one.
Weird.
So you'll see like three or four that are blank. and then they'll give me a check for, you know, $2,000.
Is there an obstacle to implementing this?
No.
It was in front of the board. The board reaffirms that we're going to adhere to the policy and statute.
Are there any ramifications for not having secured this money for this fund?
Yeah, but there's no money.
Yeah, there's no recourse on that. I mean, it was a practice that was made, yeah. And I think you'd end up in some sort of litigation over that. But moving forward, we've identified, we've corrected, now we're moving forward, we charge accordingly. I guess my sensitivity is more so of that $50,000, you know, based on, and I'm just taking this off of what you guys have provided, between the $300,000 in revenue and then the $100,000 in service fees that you had last year, right? That's $400,000 that you have.
That's 10% and all the credit card fees, yeah. So we're $369,000.
Okay, so $369,000 from that standpoint. This $50,000 revenue stream that could be on an annual basis, plus or minus to some degree, is now reflective of 15%, right? So you may, I guess what I'm trying to say is there may be analysis that you want to do to be able to go back and say, wow, if we were to do this moving forward, we may find ourselves in a situation where we don't necessarily have to increase fees. We just have to execute against what our policy actually states and the administration of fees.
Yeah, I think the scary part is our technology fees are, we didn't have them 5-6 years ago like we do now, and they'll seem to go up every year, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of want to, you don't want to try to play catch up every year when those fees keep going up.
Well, I'm not disputing that. Yeah. I think those are things that we're going to have to live into to kind of feel out anyways. I'm just saying, your $50,000 when we started the conversation was kind of like, that would be tremendously awesome to have. And it seems like, to some degree, we've got that sitting on the table. So, you know, trying to not rush us, recognizing there may be other things that we need to move forward with, increasing fees, and we want to be thoughtful about that. I would hate to be the one going to an administration saying, you know, hey, we want to increase fees, and we also recognize we weren't charging on things that we should have otherwise been charging on. That may not play so well. I wouldn't be too thrilled about hearing something like that. So I think it's, you know, if we could at least back of the napkin kind of say.
And what I can do, and this is something I'll do certainly before we meet next week at the board meetings, I can go in and what I need to do is pull out the schools that paid those fees and the ones that didn't pay to get a feel for really what that looks like, because there are some schools that paid mod fees last year that are not in business this year. Art Institute is one. I know they paid fees. They're gone. So all those fees.
And I think you're going to see volatility anyways in that particular bucket. I don't think it's going to be $50,000 that you can bank on.
Right.
Some years it might be $20,000. Some years it might spike at $50,000 or $70,000. I don't know. Maybe even last year was a unique year. But I guess the takeaway is we're tight on money, but yet we're not even collecting what we should be collecting. There's a little bit of a disconnect there. And the question becomes, if we were collecting that, what then does become the true deficit that would help drive us to make a more educated decision on what we think an increase should be? And I hear you, Fred, and respectfully with regards to where do we land compared to other states given our metropolitan size, but I would also push back on that to say not all states are the same, and I don't, just because they're doing it over there and charging that may not make sense that we also just follow the leader on that, but we're at least thoughtful in regards to why we're making the recommendation in the way that we are, based on the services we provide.
And I also, if we haven't been able to change this for 20 years, over 20 years, trying to look forward to see what those would possibly be in the next 10 years, so you're not going to get a second shot at the apple to try and make sure that this goes right. So it's like I'm just trying to figure out what number, so I would do this in budgeting, right? What number do I have to get to figure out what the fees have to be? I want to get there. And when I was doing it, and I did make obviously some errors, I was looking at 50% in increasing our the fees we have currently would have gotten us to the 450, right? But that's not even really the number. And you're not going to be able to recoup it in 1 year, right? When there's no expectation of that. So now we're going to have to build a structure to show every year where are we getting? So are we getting an additional 50,000? It's going to take us 4 or 5 years to get the 200 that we need to be having over here sitting, you know, in your fund that's just completely depleted, you know, and then what do we do when, you know, if and when we're blessed enough that it continues to do that, you know, through Sarah, we did a refund back, you know what I mean, or we were able to reduce the, you know what I mean, so it's like, what are those? Because if we show that we have got that far, you know, that we're not trying to get anywhere more than what we need, if we have extra, here's what we do, you know what I mean, and then I think they'd have to hear, because you clearly have a number you can't get to. You know what I mean? So
the 50,000 doing the fees that we hadn't been collecting, and we'll, that is a, by the way, it's a button that I can push one day. If the day we have that meeting next week and you all agree we're all good, that night we can start assessing those fees that minute. It's pretty quick because of the automation of the system. But that's still, I mean, it solves somewhat of a problem, but it doesn't solve the larger piece, which is really based on what we're asking. We need to have more than, we need to start collecting at a point to get up above above our appropriation that we're bringing in, so that we do have to some flexibility that we don't currently have. I don't.
I think that's what he's saying. If we collect what we are supposed to, you get to exactly where you're supposed to be. Then if we go with a proposal to increase, you know, fees based on usage by the user, maybe it only has to be 20%, and in 5 years you'll have your bucket full, and we know that we're just incrementally working there, because there's no way to get from net here to that number in 1 year. You're not going to do, they're never getting that through. You know what I mean? So what would those fees be? Like, what's the number of that top charge that we would need to, if we're going to tier them? What does the tier look like? I mean, I would think, and maybe I'm wrong, don't we have to have this all laid out before we can propose it?
Mm-hmm.
And when does that have to be done? Because that's what I thought we were on a time.
Well, the budget, if the budget is due September 1st,
that's
tough. This year is done. The one for 2021, that is what is due the 1st. Now, to submit the budget, I can go ahead. I mean, I don't see any changes in the appropriation. Do you? It was a matter of, now we can come up and have a pretty good idea of what our revenues will be. So that will get submit what we're kind of on the crunch for before we realize these program mods should be charged. I mean, I really never even thought about it until we pulled that report, because we never tracked them. And I was just following what you guys do for accreditation purposes, and just was trying to be fair. Anyway, you can go ahead and censor me. If we're going to do a fee increase and you want to do it that it gets started in this session, we gotta have it like what? October? No later?
Yeah, we have to have it run through, find a senator, find some people that
so
are
I think we're all wanting to move in that direction, but honestly, I heard Dr. Lack and myself, and I'm sure Mr. Merman has a document. It is Dr. Wright. Mm-hmm. Okay, sorry.
A couple times.
I have none, so you can just call me Mike. But point being is, I really don't want to go in front of somebody to say, kind of eyeballed it, and they were like 20%. That's a big number.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. So I think being able to get perspective on bringing this back in the fold of charging that revenue, here's what the deficit looks like, thoughtfully trying to grow over time, not trying to get it all back immediately, recognizing, yes, we will incur some additional technology cost increases, as well as unpredictable things, school closures and then associations with, or costs associated with those types of things, right? So that's, I think we're just trying to get to
this is the new revenue stream that will come in for us to help offset. Here's the gap. Now let's talk about realistically what is absolutely in alignment. We might land at only a 10% increase is necessary, right? Which may be more palatable for a lot of different people to just get around and say, hasn't been changed in a long time. We're talking about taking something from 2,300 up to 2,600, right? All of a sudden, that's like, okay, that doesn't seem like the end of the world at that point, nor something people want to spend a whole lot of time nitpicking around versus we want to take it from 2,300 to 5,000. That's probably going to draw a lot more attention, and people are probably going to be wondering, why do you need that much?
Can I ask, just on what you're talking about, Mike, are there other departments that have successfully raised fees or licensure?
I think the only ones that we heard were, because our fees are in statute, so it requires a very high meetings and, you know, going to the legislature. The other boards that we talked to was accountancy board.
They're in.
They put everything in rule. So the rule is a much lower level.
Much different.
Did we do this wrong in the beginning then when we set up? Like nursing board doesn't. They don't. There's no money there. Like schools don't get charged anything, right? From the nursing. So they're not even generating, so I guess I'm assuming that most of them are not generating enough to even, they're not generating anything, they're just a cost center. We're trying to balance something out, wouldn't that be a good thing?
They're getting from their licensed nurses.
Nurses.
And they have like 30,000 nurses.
Oh, that's cool.
The schools are the programs.
The practitioners.
Yeah, practitioners.
Pay a licensing fee. But I think it's in like I know that Andy, like my license went down at some point. Like I was like, really? It seems bizarrely cheap.
It went down?
Naturopath?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was like they had a surplus, you know, X number of years, and they cut it in half. So it must have been in rule, because I don't remember. It was definitely
If it's in statutory.
So is that a route to pursue as opposed to trying to go to the legislature every time you need to make.
Are there any other boards that are in the statute like us? Are they all over
the map? No, it's all over the map.
So, I mean, if there are other boards that have the authority to do this within rule, would it be an easier or more palatable case to make to the legislature and to the governor's office to say that what we do is good for business, you know, because, you know, value is not the same thing as like the cheapest price, and what we provide to schools is we provide, you know, immense value to the schools because we have, you know, a staff that's been here for a long time, does, you know, walks people through, you know, protect consumers, we balance all of that, and, you know, like every business, it's ridiculous to have to go every 20 years and try and, you know, make adjustments, you know, and this way we can make adjustments when we replenish it, we can decrease the strife assessments, which is good for the schools, they pay less in to it, so it's better that way. So it's like, you know, it's not business friendly, you know, to, you know, tell businesses that you can never change your fees. That's like communism. That's what this country we live in. So
I'm just concerned.
He's the one who's going to say that, I'm not.
I'm just concerned that maybe a hard sell, because others are doing that, right? It's a pretty big shift to suddenly move from one to the other. I just wonder if that's going to open up even more debate, more scrutiny,
I mean,
more stalls.
I don't even know what that
is. Well, the other thing, and I think some of them, what they do in statute is they have a cap, you know, not to exceed whatever, so you don't have full reign.
I think that's isn't that how accountancy was?
Yes. So it's in statute that you can't have anything, but the rules are the ones that define what they can charge and what they do charge, and those do change.
But the rules are determined by the accountancy board versus the state.
Correct. The board votes on that.
But it has to, it's done in rule, but it has to be approved by GERC.
Yeah.
Okay. Governor's Regulatory Review Council.
Yeah, but it doesn't have to go and get voted on at the legislature.
You got to have a council approval who reports to the governor. So, I mean, there is still a great deal of accountability, and, you know, they're not easy to fly by either, but it's not...
The bus owner.
It's not the legislature.
Not 200 people.
Plus, every time you go to the legislature, you're tying up everybody. You know, you're taking everybody's time away from the work that they're supposed to be doing to... essentially to becoming lobbyists.
I feel like we have like plan A, plan B, plan C, plan D, and we just have to flush out each of the plans. And the first plan is collecting what we already say we're supposed to collect. Plan B is figuring out what we're going to need for until we get to the top and do it and actually doing, you know, a one sheet that shows here's what we need to increase. We increase it by here, and in 5 to 7 years or whatever, we'll get to where we need to be or whatever, and that's plan B. And then plan C might be that moving it from statute to a rule, that's even a thing, or, you know, because that seems like that's much harder than even the getting the fees up a little bit. I'm assuming that's like a, that sounds
the
really big.
The fees is a statutory change.
Say both of the same process? Say, oh,
just see, if you're in statute, it's a legislative change. If it is just, not just, if it's in rule, it's done, the board determines what the fees are and then gets approval from GERC.
Okay, so that sounds like that would be...
A statutory change is a statutory change, either way.
So that would be B then, because if you get that change, then you could fix your fees on the in the rule side, right? And if that doesn't work, then we're still trying to fix the fees, so that's C. You know what I mean? So it's like then we at least have our plans laid out, so we're not having to
read it backwards from your head.
So
yeah, and this is not my bag.
So bring it to the meeting next week.
You're not
to collect the fees.
Yes.
I'll put it.
Okay.
Number two is explore changing the any fee change adjustments to become by rule as opposed to statute, which mm-hmm. would make a statutory change. For that, and C is to go piecemeal back to the legislature with a proposal for us.
And once we get the budget in, now that knowing that we have this potential money here, and if Avis ever gets uploaded so that we can do our budget, that'll make it a lot easier. We'll have a lot clearer picture of where we are. So we haven't even been able to. We downloaded Buddies, but it doesn't have any of last year's numbers in it yet. They haven't been uploaded. They haven't closed out 2019 yet.
Just seeing that, you know, the difference between what you all do at the school level for budgeting and what we do at the state, it's exactly the opposite of what you do. Long-term planning, you know where your revenue's flowing, you put all of your... We don't have that opportunity to do that. We don't even know really where we stand from last fiscal year. We don't have all of that in. You fly blind, and then you've got about 2 weeks to throw a budget together for the next fiscal year.
I wish I could say it was felt all that different in the business world. Sometimes where you are also on the ground to do things relatively quick. Is it within the board's ability to vote on a rule, vote on moving to this rule change, if you will?
You'd have to have statutory authority first.
So, but no matter what, between B and C, we'd have to go.
So
it makes more sense for us to try and get long-term ability to make the judgments
in
before, and it does that. But if we don't get that, well, you're only stuck with this because you got nothing else anyway.
Is there anyone, I was thinking of who can we talk to find out the relative difficulty of Dr. Lick's choice B?
To go through
C. Because I called my friend Greg Harris.
Yes, sir, why don't you call Greg in
there? I called Greg Harris.
Your friend.
And who used to do government relations for the school. And you know, he thought that the legislature's appetite for increasing rates or fees is just
zip.
I mean, think about it, like, when's the last time that a legislator got
They get a raise every year.
Right. So I mean, that's kind of the mindset. So I mean, I can call Greg and say,
could you ask Megan? Let's hear from two different people.
Well, actually, during our last conversation we had with him, he wasn't overly enthusiastic about that.
John is
about
what? Again, we're showing the numbers to say that this isn't going to come out to zero. This is going to keep going negative. I don't understand. I mean, logically, great, you might not be in favor, but I don't understand.
It's a different world, then.
Yeah.
You're in a different world.
So who's the politics?
Who is the ultimate decision maker to do?
To increase these fees.
Let's say
if we were to
legislature.
So the board can say
two thirds? It's a really high percentage.
The board can give us direction to suggest that we move forward with that.
So I just go back to what I shared in the previous meeting, which is let's award people the opportunity to say no.
24.
When we have sidebars and work what other people think or don't think, our likelihood of success or non-success, we don't take any action. Let's go ahead and be thoughtful with the recommendation, bring it forward, and give people the opportunity to say no. If they say no, at least one, the board is demonstrating we are effectively trying to manage the situation that exists here. And if the decision party that ends up saying no after that thoughtful recommendation to try and protect consumers in the state of Arizona is denied based on that, that cannot function and meet their expectation of protecting the consumer in Arizona, I would hate to be the one who denied that ultimately, because that probably in public opinion would not be well received on any level.
Well, in 5 years, if they're still in office and there is no money and there's no board and something goes awry, then it's got to be someone else's gig.
So I'd rather just give people the opportunity who are in the authority position to make the go, no go, but we need to be thoughtful in the recommendation we bring forward and not try and necessarily politic or lobby it our way in, but just be, this is what it is. We are a small board. Members change out in this board constantly. I'd probably have a little heartburn if something was written into a rule that says, hey, the board has this authority now, and it's like, and the board's seen 100% turnover over the last 2 years of brand new people, and what do they really know or don't know to make an educated decision on what we need to do moving forward? So, not saying that's the case, just saying sensitivity around those types of things. Let's just bring forward a recommendation. Dr. Lex said it very well. We've got an A, B, and C type of choice and consideration. All of them have pros and cons associated with it. I think if we can be thoughtful and tighten up the numbers, we can bring that forward. And, giving those options may create opportunity for us to get that approved.
I think that's good. I think there's a couple other things to think about. One, this is the potential to be a better year to move forward and have conversations at the legislative level only because of the argosy. I mean, every one of those senators across the street got a phone call from somebody at argosy about how horrible the situation was. And we went over and had conversations with a couple of folks over there to kind of talk about, some of them don't even know what we do. What we
were sponsored was actually growth and renewal as well, from what I understood.
Right.
So there's appetite, certainly recognizing the consumer concerns that exist out there for the board to function in a responsible way. It seems like an appropriate platform to the position.
I think the other conversation to have too is the next level down, which is aligning staff with expectations. So again, right now the staff is, we're all really busy doing and getting everything prepared to turn over to you to do even more work, right? I mean, you see the work that's done for the most part before you see the first packet, but you know, as we stated before, there's things that never get to you because it's just so not fitting to get to a board. I mean, the other conversation too is to.
But isn't the board's site? Or I apologize for not knowing your structure, but I'm assuming this group reports into some entity.
You guys.
A board. So who's,
you're in.
Who is operationally evaluating the efficiencies within your department?
The board.
The board.
Can I ask a question? So, and I think we're probably used to a different structure. Like, just curious. Performance reviews. Do you guys do that thing?
Do what?
Performance reviews?
Performance. I think that's
the performance reviews of me and Keith are you guys. And Kevin. Yeah, Kevin. And then Kim and Kevin does Rachel, I do Kim.
So who's sitting down with you to actually share feedback on your performance?
Yeah.
Not me. I mean,
we're collecting, pointing at you is the, meaning the board is the ultimate responsibility.
When is the last time that's happened?
Do you have to do that in a board meeting?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
I don't know.
Last year.
Right.
Let's see, it's been 5 years since we had increases.
Five or six years ago,
maybe longer.
And we can't decide that either, though.
What?
Increases?
Yes.
Yeah, you can.
You can.
As long as we have a budget.
No. Right. Right now you're looking at taking money away from it, so to make out. But.
We have not requested one in 5 years.
Okay, so there just seems to be some... It's hard. I think it's just for us. It's not in the normal, like, how we do things. So it almost seems like, you know, we should have almost a schedule, too, not where we're looking at the tuition and fees and all that stuff, and we're looking at performance and other things, because you guys, at this point, even if we raise tuition, no one who works for the board would ever get a raise at this rate, ever. So,
or review. To even know what you're doing or anything of that nature.
We can kind of get a read from you or to
or a fair, but I think there's value and merit in going through that type of evaluation and discussion. Honestly, I'm outside of the board meetings and all the reviewing I'm doing outside of the board meetings, I'm not coming down to your operations to see, you know, hey, are y'all standing by the water cooler for the
So I mean,
I'm
surprised to hear that you're not overseen from that standpoint.
We never have been.
Which ultimately creates the gap.
But I'm not saying that's right or wrong, it just has never been that way.
So the board has oversight responsibility. The board really doesn't have operational responsibility.
No, I technically have operational responsibility.
And so the board delegates that responsibility to the executive director who oversees the rest of the staff, right?
That's exactly right.
And so, I mean, I think that's for you. Mm-hmm. The rest of the staff, I assume some, I don't know where it's written, has the recourse should the executive director
yes.
like a monster or something like that. That the staff can bring a grievance mm-hmm. to the board.
It's on the website.
But generally speaking, it shouldn't be our...
No.
We shouldn't be monkeying around. We should, however, be evaluating the executive director, number one.
Yeah. But didn't she just say it's them, too? That the way that it's written, it's not...
Technically, it's me. In the past, Keith has come.
So I think to Mike's point, I think that this is an opportunity to, to address some of that by scheduling, on an annual basis, for review of the executive director, and the executive director can report on the general state of operations as part of that. The other thing is that I think to go to, whether it's the governor's office or to the legislature, I think having the board say, I serve as a volunteer on a board that does, I see them on a monthly basis. I see their work on a monthly basis. And it's outstanding work. And I would feel remiss, and I would be abdicating my fiduciary responsibility to not make sure that the budget is sufficient for the board to do the work, and for them to get, cost of living or, whatever kinds of things that people,
need
to do that kind of work, to work at the level that we expect them to. And again, to me, this idea of, we want to be business friendly, that's you don't want to be this isn't, Arizona isn't the dollar store. This is we do good work. This is a great place to live. This is a great place to have schools. And if people want to go to Wyoming, to open their schools, then let them go there.
I definitely appreciate that piece of it. I think, just honestly, I didn't even understand that we had
that totally never came up of
really responsibility when you get right down to it. It's sad to know that maybe that hasn't been happening for the last several years to the degree that it should be, but also from the standpoint of, and this is where the sensitivity came in, of saying to justify merit increases, right? Businesses will evaluate people and determine, ultimately what is the work that load requirements associated with it to determine, is it being run efficiently, is it not being run efficiently, and ultimately then try and make determinations of pay increases, those merit increases that should be coming on an annual basis, as well as determination of staff sizes. If more staff is necessary based on the increase in volume. Although technology has advanced, if you are, and I'll say this, I'm trying to be as respectful as possible, if you're making decisions to go deeper in your review than what you should otherwise be doing, you may be making a personal decision to invest 50 hours of review time into something that should otherwise, by policy practices, only take 10 hours, for example. I'm using one determination of how you'd evaluate salary, work production, all those types of things. That's a sensitivity point of it's just nobody's actually in there, outside of the executive director, which makes sense, right, to make those determinations. Recommendations should be, I would assume, floating from you to say, my people are doing, X amount of work on an annual basis. They're, they're 3,000 hours of labor versus 2,080 hours of labor that they should be doing in a normal standard year. We need to bring out more staff or make constructive decisions around not continuing X, Y, and Z anymore, right? Whatever that is. I'm not and maybe those discussions are happening, but those are probably discussions that, if it is the responsibility of the board, those should probably start out with itself.
Well, Terry, when there was money, Terry did do proposals for increases for staff to the board that they would review and neither approve or not approve based on her recommendation. But it just hasn't been there to do that in the last 5-6 years.
So the work has not stopped and it's grown.
And I think that's
ignorant.
I just want to be fair, Terry. We have got our due raises. It's been a while, but we should get why. So
I guess what I'm trying to say is, I think the board is ignorant to the workload increase, potentially, that exists there, the demand, and the need for either additional staff or some other type of whatever it might be, that may be an opportunity, Terry, as you kind of evaluate to make a determination of that nature.
Well, so if I could explain, I think what it has evolved over the last 3 or 4 years as the board has changed. Board members have changed as to the way that they look and review things, as opposed to the current board members are really into depth and detail, very specific policies and procedures, whereas prior, that was not the case. I mean, our statute rules say you have a grievance procedure, used to be the case. It said you had a grievance procedure. It didn't say you had it in steps and with or designee and this and this, as the way it has evolved the way you guys want it now. Now, that's...
LOA would be a good example.
LOA is even better, because we did change grievance to be a little bit better. It used to... Kevin was alluding to it. It's in statute rule. You have this policy. It doesn't say we evaluate your policy. It says you have it. Okay? It has changed in the last 4 or 5 years, that now what has been important to the board, and we have adjusted or tried to adjust accordingly, is this is not keys to my best bailiwick, to dig into those policies and procedures and see that they're not just there, they're substantive.
We're actually telling applications, the board won't approve this the way it is.
Right.
I know you think it meets a rule, I get it, but I'm telling you, you need to change it because they're not going to accept it.
And that's just how things have changed.
Yeah.
I'm not saying
that. Those of us that are up there, those of us that are super detail-oriented in one way or the other. So if you look at half the members
of
the
finance... You're on schools.
Yeah.
These folks have never
done it. And yes, our complaints have gone down.
That's why.
And I don't know if that should be the focus, but, you know, regardless, that's how it's just been a paradigm shift.
Yes.
In the last 4 years.
And the workload, so we talked about that. We had conversations about how many complaints we had. And really, we haven't had any fewer for the most part. Most of them are still kind of the same thing, but aren't necessarily related to much of what we're doing at the board level, right? It is complaint because a student is mad at something. I mean, you know, because you've seen quite a number of them, and you know some of the others have too. But they, as it goes to rule or statute, almost none of our complaints fall into that. Very few fall into those types of categories. So we do spend today much more time at that level of detail. And you know, I've only been around on the board piece for 3 years, right? So I've seen it even change in that 3 years, where we've gone through the enrollment agreement piece. Well, I want your enrollment agreement to look like it's going to be if you're going to be for accreditation in the future. Well, the answer to that is I haven't seen any of them switch yet. Any of the small schools, mm-hmm. the moms and pops, they don't. They want to be mom and pop, and that's kind of where they want to live. For the accredited schools, you know, we've got a couple of accredited schools coming up on the board meeting next week. They're regionally accredited. They've gone through everything, and we still spend quite a bit of time aligning. You know, the Catholic University is, what, 110 years old or so, you know, going through all of their... So they've been doing this for 110 years, and then they come to Arizona, and now they have to have all these other things that are associated with what we want, which isn't necessary, because we've heard it before, where, well, just show me where it says in rule that I have to do this, and I'll do it. And they'll do it anyway, because they want to get a license.
Yeah,
that's not the issue. But it's that level of getting down to that, because, again, the staff doesn't want to hand the board a package that you go, well, God, did these guys even look at what's going on? So that's what's changed over the years, is just the level of detail for that protection. So, you know, I've always thought about less attention to detail is going to potentially create more challenges for the state and for the consumer, but it could also reduce staff if you don't have that level that we have to
so is there, from a balance standpoint,
Is there or,
a, I mean, are we out of balance in that regard? Because I mean, if we're saying that there's only so much money, and even with, you know, recouping fees, it'll be a little bit more, and the appetite in the legislature one way or the other is only so much, you know, are we out of balance with requiring too much of this kind of work? And it, I mean, it comes, it's more like, reviewing the enrollment agreements and the catalogs and all that, so I'm not, that's not
the only issue I feel like is that, and it's not with them, but I actually don't think it's yours.
I think it makes our schools better.
I think it probably does too, but here's the other thing. Why am I possibly here? Why am I here? If even like during the, you know, during the last couple big school things that we literally watched as that happened and had very little that we could even do about it, if I'm not going to contribute what it is that I do to try and help schools be better, you know what I mean? Because then you're just going to get into the, all right, off, you're off. All right, you're off. I mean, what do I say?
And that's what I'm saying. It's,
and I think you look at a comparable state to us and Florida is probably pretty close. Florida has 22 people in the office.
What?
22 yeah. Staff members. We don't need 22 staff members.
We
need 50. So we don't need that level. But they review applications, renewals at the same level we do. They have about 250 schools. All right, so they've got 50 more than we do. But they have 22 people that do it.
So normally, in a situation like this, based on the environment that you're living in, you would evaluate to say, hey, we have recognized there were breaks in our reviews that created or exposed us to some of what we experienced with schools and that type of situation. If that's even true, that may not be true, right? Like, if we reviewed even more, in greater depth, would you have prevented? Right. So I guess leveraging the skills around the table and the value associated with that, we do have to take a step back to say, maybe we are reviewing at such a granular level that we have gone too far. We maybe are out of balance, as Dr. McMahon had stated there, that could be, right? And so that's where I look to the executive director to say, you know, hey, you need to provide the board feedback because the belief is the consistency is the executive director and the board members are changing. So you may need to guide to say, hey, we are going way too in depth that we aren't. And as a result, my staff is being so thinned out on what they have to do or what they have to cover. We can't get to what we need to get to. I don't know if that's the case or not.
I think we're getting there. I mean, you know, I've done it enough with the board and Terry that
it might just be an opportunity for review because ultimately, coming full circle, what we do want to be sensitive to in a budgeting type of situation is making sure that we are bringing in the right appropriations so that they can warrant, where necessary, merit increases. They can warrant additional staff, whether even that's temporary or not, based on spikes in increased volume or whatever that may be. Those, I think, are things that are important for us that I think for us, I made the gross assumption that, hey, that is being monitored, evaluated, factored in. So when I see, you know, the personal services cost bucket that I'm assuming is a good portion, if not all of your salaries, and then some type of a thing, that stuff is appropriately being factored in. And I think what I'm hearing is that's been a flat line for a very long time, and all estimates are it's going to continue to be a flat line. And so we do have an opportunity, respectfully, appropriately, to not have that be a flat line, because it should not be a flat line. How do we build that in, but get perspective on what that really does need to be? I think, Terry, what I'm hearing is that kind of falls on you to be able to come back and say, workload of what my team goes through, of merit increases in this, we need to factor in this dollar amount for these buckets of operational execution. That's how I'm understanding it. Dr. Miller, you may have a different take on that.
No, that's good.
Just to kind of boil it down to the fact
that I was going to say, what time are we getting up? Is it 2:30 or 3:30?
2. It's at 2:30.
Oh, okay.
So, I think we've kind of like expanded our like mission creep here, but I think
we realized like there was a whole other pond over here that
right, and
they have budget implications.
Right, so you know, number one, as a board, do we? Like, I don't think we function as a board. 98% of the time just dealing with like the monthly
churn
that's going through and never really stepping back to address the questions that you're bringing up, which are, is it like, I don't remember ever having like a review of the strategic plan and all of the objectives and the measurables that are there.
Annually at the budget time. Sorry.
At the board meeting?
Mm-hmm.
I guess what I'm saying is that...
In depth? I mean,
yeah,
I've done it the last couple of years. Kevin's done it. And so we've said, here it is. And you guys, okay.
Right, but I guess what I'm saying is that we missed the opportunity. You know, it's very performant. You know, mm-hmm. It's very, here it is, we did good, we're pretty
right.
good, we're all, and it's at the end
right.
of the meeting, we're
and
like,
everybody's tired.
Like halfway out the door by then, and it doesn't get the kind of, it doesn't get the attention that it deserves. Because, I mean, if you look at the strategic plan and all of it's well written, the objectives are specific, there's actual data, you know, to demonstrate that these things are met, and yet we don't really, I should speak for myself, I don't think I fully appreciated it, and I don't think that it ties back to how the board oversees, the board is supposed to oversee the department. And so in that respect, I don't think that the department gets its due. And so I would say, you know, maybe one of the things to do is to have a board meeting that is not where we're not, we don't have any screens in front of us. And no, I mean, and it's like this is what we do. You know, so there's an evaluation of the executive director.
Be careful what you wish for.
Well,
it doesn't necessarily be the word spouse, but it may be opportunity to present. And give the
well, because then at the end of each year, you compile that, and that's what you bring to the legislature. You know, because it shows that you've sort of summarized and captured the progress of the board from one year to the next, the performance of the board. And then you can make a cogent case that this is what the board needs to run as, you know, as the people who are semi-volunteers, you know, that you've assigned, that the right, that the legislature has assigned to serve on this board. I mean, I would say I would make a motion, or you know, I would make a motion that we do something on an annual basis, you know, and there would have to be some preparation, maybe, for that. For today, however, we'll have a motion at the upcoming meeting to adhere to policy and statute, collect fees for modifications. Right? And then I texted Greg at the back and we told somebody else,
Mangum,
John Mangum, about the two pathways to pursue either going to the legislature or changing the rates and fees, or is it feasible to go for to change that to be a rules discretion?
In the opposite order, right? First, plan B.
That's B.
Yes, plan B is
right.
Rules. Plan
well,
C is
plan. Plan B is you can change it in statute that you can change it in rules.
Yes, that's
right.
Not
even B. Plan A isn't plan
but
A.
There's
A is
there's
like,
is
we're going to do A.
Statute.
Yes.
And then plan A
yes.
is that we're going to change it to it's in rule. And if we need to, plan B is we're going to go and try and chip away at a rate, some kind of rate increase. And then, and I would say in all, kind of, I'm trying to think of the right way to say this, like as a board sort of department relationship, I think there should be some kind of conversation about like how granular is too granular, how granular meets the requirements of to protect the consumers, to elevate higher education in Arizona, and what's the balance point? But that has to be done probably at like a board meeting that's not
schools
cluttered with like schools. This is being recorded, we have like
the agenda's not full, but
like
current
we have like normal meetings, and then we have like abnormal meetings, and then like you throw this into it, and it's like our brains are like are fried from from all that other stuff. So I think that's a perfectly legitimate conversation to have about like what's the right amount and put that. And then how does that go into practice, and then how does the board, kind of respond to, well, no, because we've decided we're only going to ask for this, and not this, or what's the right amount?
Okay.
Good.
I'd also like to just say, and I'm a little sensitive around this, listen, I think the board has, because the changes have left all of you in a lot of uncertain states in a lot of different ways. And so I think our desire, as you know, is we're trying to all learn as we go along as well of what those responsibilities are and those types of things. But certainly I will do a better job of making sure that I appreciate that, understand that, and want to support you in that capacity, because ultimately if you're this should not feel like you're indentured servants to a mission, but that it is truly a partnership of back and forth dialogue to support one another so that you can be valued the way you should be
valued. Okay. If Mike does that, do the rest of us actually have to appreciate the word that we are just like enough.
That's and please, and I hope you don't think that we're being
whiny.
Huh?
Whiny? Is that like
yeah, right? Whiny is
we're not learning to do less. That's not what
because I think what we have done has had extreme value to the schools. I truly do. And I have always said in all the years, I've always had the best board. It's evolved. It's different. It's different.
Currently.
The current best board ever. Now.
Always.
Way better.
I mean, when I had Laura Pompidou, when I had Dugan, when I had Jason, I have been so blessed. We have been so blessed with an awesome board. It's just, it's turned into something a little bit different. That is not his or my area of expertise, and It's made it a little difficult, I'm not going to lie.
It's gotten stressful. And the reason why is we're thinking, how did I miss that? I've reviewed this thing 4 or 5 times. It's been updated.
But it's not our, it's
so you
not
get
what we're...
You're stressed because you're thinking, you must think...
That. That's what's funny about what you're saying. I don't think that at all.
I do. I'm telling you, I never have.
If you guys wouldn't review it, guess what's going to happen? I'm going to get the same feedback.
Well,
that you guys spend 20 years reviewing it. You know what I mean?
The longest time it was my goal, you find nothing. And then I finally came to conclusion that wasn't going to... Well, no, that was... I gave that up about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But then now it's just, again, it's just the fault, and that's where, and I respect where you guys are. I mean, that's not what we're saying. I just hope you understand this isn't, I mean, this, not my best area. I mean, I used to take the time to add up those program hours. Heck, I don't anymore, because I'm looking at something else.
So, and I think that's an excellent point right there, is when you start to broaden trying to compensate for everything, you can sometimes draw attention away from the most critical, which are things like just like that, and the fact that the refund policy is the same between a catalog and an enrollment agreement. But then all of a sudden you're like, but I got to think of this, and I got to do this, and I got to do that, and the list grows to 300 things that you're trying to spot check. Oh, by the way, as we talked before, you're compensating, allowing people to bring documents in and out because they're not to where they need to be. They send them out. You thought they were only changing one area. They changed two other areas.
Oh, oh my God.
And as an engineer, I can tell you it is, that's why we have revision levels and all those types of things, so we can clearly track changes and what that looks like. I'm suggesting that here, but I think to your point, your frustration, we get to a meeting and we're like, well, right here, your cancellation policy is not the same on the catalog and in this. It's like they're two separate things, and that we should have caught that, rightfully so. But because you're having to check so much more depth across so many other programs and schools, it leads to that frustration. But to what Dr. Lex said, I don't think anybody walks away thinking they're not looking at this stuff at all. We all know you're looking. There's just a lot of crap to look at, and ultimately, those are human, understandable errors that exist there. So that could be a good opportunity to coach us as a board to even say, hey guys, I appreciate when you want to look at this, but we have a checklist for a reason. The checklists were developed for EA for catalog. Well, we're deviating off of those things to the degree that may be creating confusion and stress unnecessarily. That's not healthy or constructive for the group. So please guide us as well. That's a two-way communication.
Well,
I also think that, like, what you'll see, I just won't usually review finances. And the only times I ever really look at them is if they're on my lead, and that's just looking. That's not my thing. So what I also notice is, and it just happens to be, for whatever reason, a gender split on our particular board, is that all the gentlemen tend to focus very heavy on the finances, and then the women tend to focus on the nitty-gritty details. And so in some cases, I mean, I'm leaving that to them, the experts, to see, you know, and so I don't feel a pressure to have to ask those questions. I'll know something's wrong, and I'll be like, hey, what about you guys think, you know, and so that you don't have to do it all. I'm going to spot something wrong with something really fast. I don't expect you guys to do that. So, you know what I mean? Like, in some cases, we just have the understanding of, if the refund policy and all the financial aid and stuff like that Trish is going to do, I don't do that either. I already know. That's not me. I'll tell you where the blazing academic issues are, so we don't...
It's from another board, and we confronted a similar situation. I don't know what it was that you just said. So sorry. And it's a really interesting board. There's people in Europe, there's someone in Africa, so we have to like get up, and like for here it's like 6 a.m. for like all the calls. But and so what we did was, like, we have committees, right? So we have a complaint committee, we have a finance committee, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the process of reviewing an application, certainly a new application, and even some of the renewals, is like everything gets brought to the committee of the whole.
If they're new and the renewals, you don't get all the renewals. Or you get 230.
Right, but we get the ones that come in front of us.
Are
we renew?
Right.
We
they're there for
we do as the committee of the whole.
Yes,
and each of us get the whole, A to Z, and we decide like frankly. I think the last meeting, I caught something in one of the documents, which is like, I think I did because I had never done it, and I wanted to to show that I actually did, through like the catalog or something like that. Because we do, but that's a more efficient way. So if I know that, people are going to defer to me and some other people on the finances, I'm going to pay particular attention to that, and I'm not going to pay. And so, rather than, I wonder if, and so what we decided in this other is that we had a process for applications where before it gets to, let's say, the board meeting, it would have had to, so in other words, application review committee beforehand, and they just submit, all these things, it just gets done with staff so that, A, it doesn't take as much time in front of the whole group, and B, it doesn't feel like, it's one thing to have an email conversation going back and forth. It's another thing where you feel like, geez, how did I miss that? It's in front of, a public meeting in front of a crowd of people. What I'm getting is that if something gets missed, you guys, if we call out something in front of an applicant, right, it feels awkward or bad for you guys, right?
Yeah.
Right. It's done like in a public meeting. It's taped. It's like, sometimes there can be like 20 or 30 people there, mm-hmm. and it's like, nobody wants to go through that. But it's not like nobody on the board intends for that. And so I wonder if, rather than having that, is there a way to streamline the process so that there's the enrollment agreement, the catalogs, that goes to staff, there's a subcommittee that reviews that and gives feedback to staff if warranted. The same thing on the finances, and then it comes in front of the committee as a whole, and we only question things that that haven't either been addressed or are so troubling, like finances are so troubling, or that in spite of working with staff, people are just never going to get it.
I would love to do that. I know a couple of the other boards have that process as well. We would need to have direction on how to handle it with the applicants, because even though you tell them it's three, once we get it, it takes us normally 3-4 months. The problem is you then have people, when it's dragged out, or even if it's hitting that time period, because they can't operate and they're not making money, they start really seriously pressuring us to get it done. That would add, and I think it would be great, but I don't know how to do it. Your thoughts would be great. It would add another month or so to the review, so it would delay their ability to operate and make money.
Because they're going up against her timeline, her deadline of getting it to.
Our deadline's really, really generous. I'm always within my deadline.
No. I'm just saying, when they're sending you stuff, you're getting it ready to the board. Like you'll say,
Send the subcommittee the materials electronically. Can the subcommittee not send back feedback electronically?
It
would
be
an official
board. It's an open
meeting.
Can't do that. Now we have to use
it. See what you think about this meeting, because I think, and see how the four new applications go.
Yeah, but look at the amount of time we've spent on them, too.
Yeah.
And the really rough one got pulled as of this morning. They saved you.
But that's even before Dr. Lick runs out the door.
I know, right now.
Is we're gonna go to legislature for Plan A or Plan B, okay? And so who are our natural champions that we would want to seek advice from?
I think that was my concern. I was seeking advice from people and whether or not that does that stop us. And we don't really have any other options. Like, isn't it A or B?
No, I'm
saying. Well, I'm not saying advice. The
I would like you to ask Greg who he would think, and I know if we could do that, I would think that we should Brophy McGee, for sure.
Yeah.
My problem is I love Carter.
She's okay.
She ticked a lot of them
she
off.
She shot herself in the toes here last
I time. Know, that's what worries me. And then
you
I
think politically, she's not. She may be sympathetic, but she's not in a good place.
Yeah,
I think that's where we need to go. We need to get the appointments going. We've got to start it now. As many as we can get to
so
see.
Who are the people? So everybody on the committee?
No. No, you got to start with Catherine Brophy McGee. Perhaps Lou Alston.
Isn't Heather Carter the chair?
Heather Carter, chair of the House. Definitely her. Even
no, she's in the Senate.
Oh, Senate. Oh, that's right.
On
she's
the House side is.
Robin McGee is. She's there. Now I'm airing.
Well, what we need to do is come up with a list and see what we can do. And we've got to have some meetings. And start that process of having conversations and then bringing in, you know, you once we get to that point where we can have some, you know, factual, this is the direction that we'd like to go, these are some of the things that we'd like to do, what type of a support, but those have got to happen. What do you say, Fred? I mean, based on all that you've been like... Because they already start drafting legislation, don't they, in October?
Yeah.
September, October.
We got to get the budget done so that we have a good picture of where we are, but I can't get the budget down until they close.
So we've got to wrap in case we're going to work on that. Move forward with it.
And I'll pull together more information for you guys. Absolutely.
That may bridge us for a little while, too.
Yeah, it could.
So. Okay.
And just before we go, can I get a definition of, so the program modification, because it's going to be dependent on what kind of figures that we put in here. There are program modifications of tuition change.
That, talk to Frankie, that would probably not count as a...
Okay, yeah, I just need to know, because that will vary what this 114 is.
Pull that out. I would almost guarantee you that won't count.
Okay, so credit hours,
clock hours, name, curriculum.
Okay.
Curriculum is one or not?
Huh?
Curriculum is one?
Mm-hmm. Are we going to know it unless you tell us?
But you're not going to... You don't have it.
Correct, we don't have it. It's basically self-reported, so an institution would say...
I'm saying even if somebody made a change, do you have anybody on staff who's reviewing curriculum?
Yeah, Ken does.
Reviews just what they submit. Does not review it to quality or long term.
And Mike can
do that now.
But you have to be able to do some substitution. You know what I mean? Like there's stuff that would be a normal thing that you wouldn't. So that's my only.
Shoot me what you're thinking.
Yeah, as long as you can have like GE. A GE is a GE. I'm not gonna sit there. I can't tell you every single. That would make any sense. You can't. You know what I mean? Like stuff like that. Elected pool, I would just have my staff go back and so it's just these are buckets. The program content, those are normally the ones. If we slipped out one course previously or whatever, it wouldn't have counted in the thing because my total credits won't go up. A baccalaureate program is 120 unless it goes, you know what I mean? Like, so that's my only, those are my only.
Shoot me your comments, okay, that I can talk to Frankie about, okay?
Okay.
Like tomorrow.
Okay.
Are you good?
Okay.
I know what you need.
Okay. Yeah.
happen.